980 WCAP, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, Methuen, Nashua, and Salem, New Hampshire, serving the Merrimack Valley.
Ladies and gentlemen here assembled, you have heard that other State of the Union address this week, I trust, or heard about it. Now, we will have Active Radio's own annual State of the Sexual Union address, the one that we are happy to say and most proud to say airs exclusively on this program, on this station, and it is my great honor to once again welcome to these airwaves the leading sexologist in the United States of America, the official sex expert, of Active Radio, and by the way, I'm Hartley Plushaw, Dr. Susan Block. Dr. Susie, welcome back.
Well, it's great to be back, Hartley Plushaw. I love that name. It sounds like pleasure.
Oh, that's about the nicest compliment I've ever gotten. Join my conversation with the one and only Dr. Susie. Dr. Susie, first of all, thank you so very, very much for joining me today. I know that it's obscenely early on the West Coast where you're calling from.
Yes, yes. It's a good thing I love morning sex.
Well, I'm fine with it myself. I just wish I had more of it myself.
Instead, guys have morning wood. I'm just morning good. I'm okay here.
Yes, indeed.
Unfortunately, if I was smart, I'd go home now, right?
Well, unfortunately, I have to spend my mornings on the radio. Well, compared to...
I am home. Wait a second. Anyway, well, time for the State of the Sexual Union.
Yes, we've waited more than a year for this great annual event. So, Dr. Susie, America's sexologist numero uno, please, the floor is yours.
Okay, where shall we begin? I could just launch in and do my takeoff on the State of the Union, which I noticed kind of imitated me imitating Martin Luther King this time.
Yes.
You know, I usually do my little sermon on the mound in my State of the Sexual Union that's inspired by Dr. King's iconic I Have a Dream speech from 1963. And since I'm a sexologist, I usually say I have a fantasy. But this year, I think I'm going to take a cue from Joe's State of the Union where he says, I see a future. And it's obvious he got that from I Have a Dream, or his speech writers did. Yes. Anyway, it's not bad. I see a future, he says, where we're defending democracy and not diminishing it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose. I agree with that, and protect our freedoms, not take them away. And he goes on to see a future for the middle class, which is good, and where the wealthy pay their fair share in taxes. His son could do that, I guess the right wing would say. And where we save the planet from the climate crisis and our country from gun violence. And I think all that's not bad, but I see a future for the State of the Sexual Union.
Yes.
And so, should I tell you about the future that I see?
You are, where the State of Sexual Union is concerned, Dr. Susie, no one is better qualified to predict the future. Go right ahead.
Okay. I'm going to do that at the beginning of this show instead of at the end, and then we'll talk about the state that we're in.
Yes.
But I see a future where we will really actually make love. Hey, I'm a sexologist. I believe in making love. And I'm an old lefty, a sexy lefty, so I believe in not making war. So I see a future where we will really actually make love, not war. I'd make kink, not war, like our kissing cousins, the bonobos. And we can talk about the bonobos later, but they are basically the make love, not war chimpanzees who swing through the trees as well as with each other.
Yes.
And I see a future where we will value sex education and science, because sex education is based on science over ignorance and superstition and violence. And that includes violent so-called patriotism and religious fundamentalism. And I see a future where good, clean, consensual sex will not be considered dirty. I see a future where we, the people, will be able to speak freely, free speech.
Yes.
About our sexuality and our politics, because politics is getting just as censored as sex.
Yes.
And our profiles are being deactivated and terminated, or exterminated, if you will, like vermin. So I see a future where we will not have this, where we will be able to make our voices heard in social media, public squares, in the commons. Zuck, the cuck, I'm talking to you, Meta.
Yes.
We'll talk about that later. I see a future where we will value peace through pleasure, that's the bonobo way, over war for profit. That seems to be the American way, unfortunately, but I see a future where we can change that. I see a future where we'll value dildos and vibrators and condoms more than guns and ammo and bombs. I see a future where we'll value sexuality and regular porn more than amosexuality and war porn. I see a future where we'll value women's reproductive rights more than faith-based forced breeding. Whew, if I can pronounce that, we can maybe see a future without that faith-based forced breeding. God, sounds awful. Sounds like a farm where you have religious rituals over forcing the animals to breed. I see a future where sexual orientation or gender identification will not be a reason for discrimination. And I see a future where we'll value erotic recreation as much or more than sexual procreation in our world of human overpopulation. And speaking of that, I see a future where we will value sustainable eco-sexual alternatives over superficially sexy fossil-fueled corporate con jobs that are destroying our environment. Love the earth you make love on, brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners. And I see a future where we will decriminalize sex work as well as destigmatize it, maybe even subsidize it for the needy. I see a future where we will have a ceasefire now and permanently in Gaza and the West Bank and Ukraine and all over the world, and where Israelis and Palestinians and Jews and Muslims and Christians and Hindus and Orthodox Christians and Catholics and Buddhists and Wiccans and Satanists and everyone will express their love for each other. Hey, I'm a love doctor. I see a future where we'll embrace our sexual humanity and reject the asexual normalization of dehumanization, which we see in our world and in the cyber world. I see a future where the world will see the difference between Zionism and Judaism, and that protesting Israel's apartheid and genocide against the Palestinians does not make you anti-Semitic. And back to sex.
Yes.
I see a future where we will be bonobo and practice the bonobo way of female empowerment, male well-being, sharing resources, and peace through pleasure instead of acting like baboons.
Yes.
And that's the future I will see. Brothers and sisters, that's a future I do see. And I will take questions now.
Dr. Susie, thank you so much. Round of applause here. I'm ready to vote for you for president now. After hearing that, I mean, you have the best, by far the best platform of any of the candidates this year, which isn't saying much, but you really knocked it out of the park. So that is your vision for the future. Not to depress anyone, but.
That's not happening right now.
Unfortunately, we've got the present to deal with. And one of the things I admire about you, one of the many things I admire about you, Dr. Susie, is your great skill in tying in our contemporary politics and culture with the sexual aspect of things, which is very, very much a part of it, whether people want to admit it or not. And in terms of where we stand politically, this being a presidential election year, it looks like people who have very different and very opposing views from yours are emerging as prominent people in our politics. There was that statement that I'm sure you knew about that I sent you that woman, what was she, a congresswoman or someone, saying that it's the duty of women to procreate, and any sex outside of procreation is evil. And while we can consider that to be a lone voice of whoever said it, unfortunately, there are a lot of people who agree with her, apparently, or agree with her overall worldview. So as rosy as your future might be, that's kind of the thing we have to deal with at present. So as you contemplate election year 2024, how will your vision somehow emerge from the rather dreary political landscape that we face now?
I'm a visionary, not a miracle worker. I know what you're saying, and I certainly can see the present, that there's a lot of folks right now that fetishize the fetus and eroticize the embryo, but once you're born, you're over the hill to them.
Yes.
And they honor procreation over the recreational aspects of sex. And, hey, procreation is important. We need to continue the human race, but last I heard, we were passing 8 billion people on this earth, and I think about 100 years ago there were less than a billion, so we're increasing very fast. We're procreating at a rapid clip, and yet it's not fast enough for some people, for some reasons. And I guess a lot of these reasons are capitalism, you know, reproduce so we'll have plenty of workers to make into cannon fodder for our wars and make into basically cogs in the wheels of capitalism to do whatever crappy work needs to be done. That's for the poor. For the rich, well, they want their grandchildren to procreate. So it's not good enough that there's plenty of people in the world. And look at all these people at our borders. Look at all these people that are starving, that need a place in the world, and that our capitalist ways have displaced because of climate change, because of our wars. All these people are displaced. If we could just figure out how to adopt and adapt.
Hmm.
We could work with the people that we have, and we don't need to reproduce at such a rapid clip. But no, they want to have their own grandchildren, their own race to pass on their billions of dollars. And if they have billions of dollars, they have plenty of money, thanks to Citizens United, to influence the influencers, the real influencers, the politicians yes. that make laws. And these politicians are in the pocket of people with money. And yes. some of those people represent corporations or just represent themselves and their own interests and their own grandchildren. And so, of course, they want to focus our incredible, powerful sex drives into procreation, into work, not pleasure. It's very Calvinist, you know, but indeed. It's in all the religions. There's a religious idea in Judaism. In Hebrew, it's called Peru Uravu. But I was talking the other night with my husband about procreation and recreation. And there's also recreational sex in the Bible. Mm. It's not all for procreation. And there's nothing that says you shouldn't have some recreational sex. I mean, they have some caveats, of course, and restrictions, lots of restrictions. And you can, might get stoned to death if you transgress. But at the same time, we've become, in a way, lately, thanks to the rabid Christian nationalism of the right, which would include also other religions, a religious nationalism, and the political correctness of the left that says, you know, you basically have to get consent signed, sealed, and delivered by a notary public before you can have it. And there's just these forces from the right and the left that are converging against sexual pleasure.
Indeed. Dr. Susie, speaking of capitalism, we have to go to a breakdown.
But, of course.
But when we come back,
we
will have more of the annual Active Radio State of the Sexual Union Address with America's number one sexologist, Dr. Susan Block, here on Active Radio, here on the Voice of the Valley, WCAP. We'll be right back.
980 WCAP, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, Methuen, Nashua, and Salem, New Hampshire, serving the Merrimack Valley.
Well, if you wanted the annual State of the Sexual Union address, you got it right here. I'm Hartley Pleshaw. This is Active Radio, and I am most pleased to be joined once again by America's number one sexologist, Dr. Susan Block. Dr. Susie, before the break, you touched on the matter of censorship. It looks like there are political forces in the country, individual states, who seem very intent on opposing not just abortion. Since the Dobbs ruling, they've been able to do that in individual states, although they were doing so long before then, in fact. But now it appears that contraception and sex education are the next targets on their agenda. And, of course, and censorship is something that is very personal to you because you're going through your own censorship battle right now. So could you please talk about how you see that going on a national level or individual state level, and talk about your own situation, as it were, with Zuck the Cuck, as you call him.
Right. Well, that's not original, so it must be true. No, I don't know if it's true, but certainly we do know that he's a big censor, and it's his fiefdom, right, Meta? And it's the commons, their megalopoly, Meta. It's beyond a monopoly on our public square of communication, and yet they make a practice of deactivation. So come join the demonstration against it if you're in LA on June 26th, which is when I'm going to take Meta to arbitration. And if you're a lawyer and you want to help, although I have a lawyer, but certainly if you want to help, email me at drsusanblock@gmail.com. And if you've been deactivated, terminated, exterminated by Meta, if you've ever been put in Facebook jail unfairly, if you've been shadow banned on Instagram, come join us. And we're also going to start a social media content providers union, because these platforms, they make lots of money on our work, and then they can censor and terminate or exterminate us like vermin if their algorithms tell them that it would be cost effective in some way for them to do so. And that's just wrong. Just like Biden said, banning books is wrong. And I agree with him about that. And yet I think that there's more banning of speech than just books. And it's generally wrong.
Indeed. Of course, you are a strong supporter of free expression in every realm. It's interesting that the whole question of internet and social media censorship seems to be crossing a lot of traditional ideological and political lines. You have a lot of conservatives who are opposed to who want the government, believe it or not, to intervene with the social media giants and the internet giants, and there's also the question of free speech versus what a private company wants to do with its own situation. So, well, first of all, of course, I'm very biased in your case. I wish you all the luck in the world. I hope you win this thing. And
thank you.
I don't understand why Mr. Zuckerberg is so, or his people, or whoever makes these decisions.
Or his bots, really. Yeah. It comes down to that. What I believe is that a bot made the decision, perhaps based on my sex educational language mixed with political language. And so it was deactivated by algorithm. And then afterwards, lawyers come in, basically. Human beings are defending the bot's decision. So we have a situation in which we have humans defending dehumanization. And actually, that situation is going on in many, many aspects of our society right now. So it's a worrisome situation, and we have to do what we can to defend, really, humanity and humaneness. And that's why I look to the bonobos, because the bonobos, even though they're not actually human, they teach us a lesson in how to be humane. They share, they care, and they're very sex positive, of course, and they're very recreational sex positive. And just getting back to what we were talking about before the break, how there's such an emphasis now on procreation, and that's what sex is for. And the bonobos show us that, sure, sex is for procreation, they procreate too, but it's so much for recreation. It's so much about taking care of each other and sharing love and stopping violence. The bonobos are probably the most sex positive creatures on earth, certainly the most sex positive apes, and they are the closest apes to us, very close to us, our kissing cousins, I call them. But they have never been seen killing each other in the wild or captivity, unlike all the other apes that kill a lot. Of course, I was going to say Americans, but humans kill the most, and Americans kill the most of humans. But it seems as though bonobos have figured out a way to reduce violence. They don't completely eliminate violence, but they reduce it, and they have completely eliminated war, because common chimps make a kind of war, and they seem to have completely eliminated murder. They don't seem to murder each other. Maybe we're going to teach them someday. I hope not. But in the wild and captivity, bonobos have never been seen killing each other. And it seems to be because of these factors, the main factor being sexual pleasure, recreational sex, sharing and caring and cuddling. It's not all intercourse. A lot of it is outer course. And also female empowerment. The bonobos are very matriarchal, and yet they take care of the guys. I think the Me Too movement could learn a lot from the bonobos, because the bonobo males are nurtured, and that's a very, very important aspect of the bonobo kind of equation that translates to no killing. So we need to take care of our males, empower our females, and have more and better and more responsible recreational sex.
Indeed. Now, we've kind of criticized the right wing in these matters. I think it's only fair, and you alluded to it earlier in the program, to criticize the left wing in this regard. There are many people on the left. There are feminists. There are other people on the left who say they are bitterly opposed to what they call pornography. They are bitterly opposed to what they call prostitution as opposed to sex work. And, you know, there were, to listen to them, they sound, a lot of them sound exactly like the people on the right. They may be coming at it from a different angle or think they have different motivations. But you mentioned the Me Too movement. I think everyone agrees that rape is bad, sexual harassment is bad, sexual discrimination is bad. But, did, in your opinion, Dr. Susie, did people seeking good during the past few years go off into a tangent that was not, in your view, sexually healthy?
Okay, sure. People are always seeking good. I don't think there's anybody, except maybe a real psychotic sadist, who will acknowledge, I seek evil. Right. We all think we're seeking good. And one thing is, a lot of people think they're seeking good when they, of course, make money. And one thing we're seeing is that there's a lot of money to be made in sex negativity. And it can be made on the right wing. I'm talking to you, Leonard Leo. I think he's somewhere in the radius of WCAP, because Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society, I know he's right-wing, and I will talk about the left in a moment, but he is one of the orchestrators of the Dobbs decision, and he is a big mover and shaker in the Federalist Society, and I think he has a big mansion in Maine, and I'm just going to say, Leonard Leo, we see you trying to take women's rights away, trying to take America back to a time like a Handmaid's Tale. And we see you trying to strip sex of recreation for the sake of procreation, forced breeding. And we see you putting judges on the Supreme Court, reactionary judges who are bribed one way or another to make even more reactionary rulings restricting sexuality and liberating big business from any restrictions that might restrain your beloved friends who take you on trips and give you gifts and pay your bills, like Brett I Need a Beer Kavanaugh and Amy the Handmaid Coney Barrett and Neil Handman to the billionaires Gorsuch. And Leo Leonard picked them and forced them on America. And they've all ganged up to overturn Roe v. Wade, along with Sam the Leaker Alito and Clarence Uncle Thomas and John Citizens United Roberts. So Leonard Leo and his friends in the Federalist Society, they'd like to get rid of contraceptives too, or at least make them less accessible. So I see them as definitely a stronger force, but they're also paying off left wing or so-called left wing, I guess you'd call them sex negative feminists that are in academia. They're trying to get into academia. You sent me a video of, I guess, an academic lady who is talking in very intellectual terms about how women should rewild sex, which sounds really fun, like wild. I think of bonobos swinging through the trees and with each other. But no, she means that we shouldn't use contraceptives. We should just allow ourselves to get pregnant whenever we have sex. That somehow this is feminist? It's pretty convoluted to me, yet intellectuals can always find a way to get to their point. You can cherry pick examples, etc. And really what I think it comes down to is the lady is getting paid. She, like a lot of people, get funded, and funding seems to come from people that don't see any benefit. They don't see capitalist benefit in recreational sex unless you're going to spend a lot of money on it. And then it's really taken the sex out of the recreation. You're really focused on the money spending. And so basically they want to pay academics and left wingers that they can find to get into this message of sex negativity. And yes, it does dovetail with some of the Me Too objectives. I do support the Me Too movement, and I do believe that it is important that we not harass each other, that we not bully each other. And bullying can take the form of bombing your neighbors or bombing occupied territories, hello Netanyahu, and bullying can take the form of just forcing someone who's in under capacity to you to have sex in the workplace. I mean, it can take a lot of different forms, and I'm grateful to the Me Too movement for pointing this out and for bringing a lot of offenders to justice. However, they overstep with some people, and the right wing has fed this. Sometimes it seems as though the right wing is more liberal in terms of sex than the left.
So
it's harder and harder to see the two as distinct like we used to.
Indeed. Dr. Susie, we have to go to another break, but when we come back, we'll have more with our guest, Dr. Susan Block, who is now in the process of delivering her annual State of the Sexual Union address and commentary thereof. I'm Hartley Plushaw. This is Active Radio. This is WCAP, where everybody gets it. We'll be right back.
980 WCAP, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, Methuen, Nashua, and Salem, New Hampshire, serving the Merrimack Valley.
I'm Hartley Plushaw. This is Active Radio, and we are most happy to be joined once again by America's number one sexologist, Dr. Susan Block. Dr. Susie, it seems like, as Pat Benatar just reminded us, there are people out there who use sex as a weapon, politically or in other ways. And as you look at the way the world is going today, we have two major awful wars going on. And I,
at least,
yes, indeed. And I couldn't help but notice that in the case of what's going on now in the Middle East, it looks like I've noticed, maybe you have too, a kind of a sexual propaganda aspect to that situation. I know that I don't know about the Palestinian side so much, but I know that there are female members of the IDF who've been sending out what I'd have to call, politely, pin-up shots of themselves on social media and videos and such. And I was just curious about this because you've touched on this many times in terms of what you call the amosexual situation, the way in which sex has been subordinated to support violence, whether it's war or other ways. Please, the floor is yours.
Yes, amosexual is that feeling that the gun between your legs is just not enough. You gotta use a real gun or a missile or a bomb, and that's how you satisfy. Shoot the gun between your legs, guys, not these other guns, not AR-15s. And gals, too. I generally feel that weapons of mass seduction are better than weapons of mass destruction.
Yes.
But certain kinds of seduction lead to destruction. And there is an erotic glorification of violence that has been going on a long time. War porn, I also call it. It's generally gross, and it's been going on since the beginning of war. But in some ways, it's worse than ever. It's more high-tech. It's more blatant. It's more in your face. Any erotic glorification of war is what I would call war porn, from phallic missiles. A lot of people just look at them. They don't even realize that they're getting turned on like they're watching regular porn because they're looking at these missiles shooting. Hey, yes. In the old days, they would show hot pinup gals riding the missiles. It's been around a long time, and yet war porn is bigger than ever. And as you say, the IDF is using it more than ever. It's making little videos that show sexy fighters often engaged in really sadistic activities. It sort of perplexes me as to how they can find this all very sexy. But on the other hand, as a sex therapist, I understand that humiliation can be a turn-on, but it's so blatant the way that they show sadistic humiliation of the so-called enemy. They're very proud of this. They're giggling. They're happy when they show prisoners parading around in their underwear or naked, and they put them into stress positions. They've taken what we saw in 2004, Abu Ghraib, I used to call it Bush's POW porn, but they've gone through the roof of that and really gone to the next level. It's one thing to have battle fatigue lingerie, I guess that's a form of war porn, and to turn war fighters into sex symbols, but these are pretty depraved videos where they show, besides the killing, and the killing, of course, is the worst thing. Don't get me wrong. Humiliation, all this kind of sadism is really bad, but killing is worse. And yet, humiliating these people, it just makes it even worse. And it creates trauma, certainly, of course, in the victims, but also in the perpetrators, and also in us. It turns us into war porn voyeurs. And big tech, it never censors war porn like it censors regular porn.
Right.
Images and footage of human beings being killed and tortured and bombed to smithereens in the context of some sort of war or genocide, it gives you PTSD just to look at it. And it's all over the internet, mixed with these very sexual images of sexy fighters and people dancing and singing over bombing. Well, no wonder humanity is going homosexual.
And you've also mentioned this in terms of the mass shootings in this country. About
how does
that figure in?
Well,
all this?
You'll notice most of the mass shootings are committed by men in their sexual peak. Not all. Of course, it's spread out to all kinds of people, including women and trans people, but most are by men in their 20s or late teens, and they're sexually frustrated. Some of them are self-confessed incels. Some of them might not want to use the word incel, but they're not having regular sex. So they're channeling their sex drive into their guns. Some of them have huge gun collections, and they take it out on people. I mean, there's lots of reasons that they might shoot up their neighbors or a supermarket or their workplace. Very often, though, it does drill down, if you read about it, into a certain sexual frustration with a particular woman or just women in general, or just because they're closeted gay or some kind of closeted sexuality that they just don't feel comfortable coming out with. They actually feel more comfortable expressing themselves by shooting a bunch of people and committing suicide by mass murder. Some of them are veterans. I wrote a piece recently on kind of the opposite type of suicide about this gentleman, Aaron Bushnell, who committed suicide to stop a genocide, or to try to anyway. I call him the burning soldier because he reminds me of the burning monk and Saint Joan of Arc who burned at the stake. I'm not saying that it's a good thing he did this at all. He's not a role model. Don't do this. But he expressed this trauma that so many of our soldiers are going through in many different ways. I mean, we have soldiers all over the world, and maybe we don't have boots on the ground everywhere, but they are all involved in committing horrible, murderous acts, and some of them go nuts from it, so to speak, and this is what he did. I don't think he was nuts. I think he actually expressed his trauma in what he tried to be a positive political way, in a performance art way, but I think a lot of the mass murders that are committed by veterans, and they're not all veterans, but some of them are, and obviously this is the worst way to deal with your PTSD, by killing yourself, your loved ones, and people you don't know. It's just horrific how this war mentality, this war profiteering, this placing greed above lust, this denigration of lust, which is an aspect of love, and this elevation of greed, which leads to war, because what's the best way to make money? They say sex sells, but really it doesn't sell like war. War sells so well. You sell a missile for millions, and then it's destroyed, and you have to make another one for more millions, and indeed, it's a billion-dollar industry, indeed, that puts money in the pockets of politicians that then make our laws. And so no wonder we're involved in all this war, and no wonder one of the great victims of this war profiteering mentality is our sex lives.
Indeed. Dr. Susie, we've come to the end. If people want to know more about you, how can they find out?
Well, they can call me, baby. Really, if you need help with your sex life, you can call 213-291-9497. Real operators are here to help you. If you don't need personal help or you can't afford it, because unfortunately we're not subsidized for sex therapy yet in our country. We should be, but at the moment it's rather expensive, so we provide a lot of free help, including our radio show that's on every Saturday night, FDR.
Excellent.
And I won't tell you what those initials stand
indeed
for, because this is a public show.
Indeed.
But one of the things it stands for is Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Indeed.
But you can also go to my website, drsusanblock.com, and just look me up on Google, Dr. Susan Block, or Dr. Susie, S-U-Z-Y.
Dr. Susie, love you. Thank you so much. It's been
love
wonderful.
You.
It's been pleasurable. I'm Hartley Pleshaw.
A pleasure with Hartley Pleshaw.
This is Active Radio. We'll talk again next week.
980 WCAP, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, Methuen, Nashua, and Salem, New Hampshire, serving the Merrimack Valley.